Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, July 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Say, what do you think? Is beer food? I say it is, and we'll prove it today when we talk delicious craft beer and also cider, which is also a food. Joining us in Studio A, Alejandro Del Peral of Nine Pin Cider and Jim Eaton of Fort Orange Brewing. We'll sample a few beverages. You can call with your beer or cider question. We'll laugh it up. In theory, 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551 if you have a beer question or a cider question. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Alejandro Del Peral, Jim Eaton, cider and beer will slake your thirst for infotainment coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday, and I hope you have a powerful thirst today because we will talk craft cider with Alejandro Del Peral of Nine Pin Cider. Located in downtown Albany, Nine Pin has been producing great craft ciders for almost 10 years now, using 100% local New York apples and fruit. We'll also talk beer with Jim Eaton of Fort Orange Brewing, located also in Albany. Fort Orange focuses on creating fresh, flavorful beers in many different styles, many of which we will try today. If you have a question about beer, brewing, or the history of suds and cider, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. These guys are pretty young. I don't know what they'll know about the history, but they'll be able to tell you about the brewing. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Alejandro Del Peral, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
You do good work, very good work. How long have you been in business over there?
We've been in that building for 8 years.
That's great. And, and I'm sure you've learned a lot about your craft, and we will talk about that today on the show. I see you brought something, and it says light cider.
Yeah.
Under 110 calories?
It's low-cal. And low alcohol.
I'll have to have a lot of those to make it, up to my usual caloric standards. Jim Eaton of Fort Orange Brewing. I don't believe we've ever... Have we met?
No, this is a first.
I'm pretty senile, so it's entirely possible we know each other for years. How long has Fort Orange been down there?
Yeah, we're right around the corner from Nine Pin, and we've been down there for almost 4 years now.
Yeah, and you have been enjoying a great reputation, as Nine Pin has. I don't believe I've ever tried your beer, so I'm excited about this today.
Well, I fixed that remedy here right in front of you with a few cans, so looking forward to it.
Very exciting. And, you know, whenever you mention alcohol, there's a 50-50 shot. Joe Bonilla is going to show up, and he's here from Relentless PR Creative Strategy. Great to have you here, man. It's been a long time since you have been in Studio A.
Yes, it has, Ray. Love to be here. Love to see you right now, my old friend Ray.
It is great to have you. I mean, gosh, it's been years and years, and
yes,
things are opening up. In fact, we only started doing live shows with guests in the studio about a month and a half ago.
That's fantastic.
So this is great. It's old times again. And then there's a little girl over in the corner. What's the deal with that, Jim?
Oh, I brought my daughter Olivia here. She's 14, and she's seen the brewery created from scratch, and she said, hey, let's go check out this radio station this afternoon.
Olivia, what's it like having a brewer as a dad?
It's pretty fun, but we're at the brewery a lot.
Really? And so, I mean, can you even stand the smell of beer now?
Yeah, I'm used to it by now.
Really? And I understand you have something named after you at the manufacturing facility.
Yeah, I have a tank in the back named with my name on it.
Is that an honor?
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. Well, why don't you name a beer after her?
We're getting there. We're working on it.
Fair enough. Well, let's get down to business here. It's a Food Friday. If you have a question about cider making or beer making, call us, 800-348-2551. Alejandro Del Peral, we'll start with you from Nine Pin Cider. I know nothing of how you do what you do. I know a little bit about the beer making process. It's a little different.
Yep, it is. And, one of the big new things that we've been doing is working on these things that we're calling light ciders. And there's a big trend right now in the beverage industry, and it's a lifestyle trend, and people are looking for lower calorie and healthier options. And So we came up with a way to do that with cider. It's a novel process, but we tweaked it one step further, and we, instead of, you know, a lot of like your low-calorie products are using flavorings and artificial flavorings and things like that, we decided to create low-cal ciders from local farms where the flavor that we made it with, it all come from local farms. So we have a lavender lemon cider where we source the lavender from Lavender Farms in Whitehall. We have a cranberry orange where the cranberries come from Deer River Bog up in Brasher Falls, which is in the Adirondacks.
Yep.
And then we have just a New York apple flavor where the apples obviously come from Semascot Orchards.
All right. Well, I'm getting thirsty, so let's break some of this out here. Maybe we could try – let's just try a little bit of each. And while you are doing that, let's discuss – you said you do this in a little different way than you make your regular cider. Let's backtrack and talk about the process of making the cider that you've been making for 8 years now.
So it's a lot – you know, because we sort of package it like beer, you said – you know, it's brewed, right? But the reality is it's not. Cider is fermented just like you would ferment wine, and the process is actually identical. So
really?
Just like you would take grapes and press them into juice and then ferment that to create wine, we do the exact same thing, but we do it with apples. And the only difference is that we package it just like beer. So we always get lumped in with the brewers. I love hanging out with the brewers. You know?
Really?
But yeah.
So you're not an elitist about this?
No way.
I mean, we can separate you a little further if you like.
Yeah, but we really are winemakers. And if you ever come down to the cidery and take a tour, we're going to start offering tours soon. You'll see we kind of have a hybrid operation. We have the back is the winery, and the packaging room looks like a brewery.
But, I mean, cider is – it's done the same, but it's not as strong as wine. Wine can be very strong.
Right, and that's all related to the sugar content in grapes versus apples. A grape has a sugar content that's fun.
Oh, that's good radio. Right there. Our engineer is not glaring at you, so it's okay. It's good.
The sugar content in grapes is so high that when you ferment it out, you get a very high alcohol. Whereas apples, they are sweet, but they're not as high as grapes. And so the natural alcohol content of a cider is more in the 6% range. Now, these light ciders are all in the 4% range. And that is actually done in a novel way at the cidery, but traditionally it was actually made, you know, there's this sort of, people talk about the colonial America drinking a lot of cider.
Yeah.
And they also talk about giving it to the children. We're not going to give Olivia any.
No, answer. That's good. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. But they did that because they said it was safer to drink than the water.
Right.
Now, the way that they would do that is they wouldn't give the pure hard cider, the 7% stuff to the kids. They would give them what they would call cider kin. We called it light cider because it's easier to say than cider kin. But essentially you take the pumice, the leftover pulp from the press, and you soak it with water. And then it creates this very low sugar content kind of juice.
Yeah.
And then you ferment that out and you get this low alcohol product that's cider kin. And that is, and because it went through a slight fermentation, it killed all the bacteria in it. And that was what was safe to give to the children in colonial America.
And still, you know, the colonial kids were probably a lot more mellow because they had just a little bit of the cider. All right, let's try this. Which flavor is this?
This is the cranberry orange.
Okay, there we go.
Jim, you want some?
Yeah, of course.
I'll bet Bonilla wants
some. Of course.
Yeah, there we go. I'll wait for the crew.
We're not going to give you any.
By the way, if you have a question for Jim of Fort Orange Brewing or Alejandro of Nine Pin Cider, give us a call, 800-348-2551. And cheers, all of you. May
cheers,
the pandemic
cheers.
Be over. Here we go.
It's really nice to be drinking in a room with people. So, cranberries.
Nice. Not too sweet.
Not too sweet. Now, cranberries are not a traditional New York crop, right? I mean, if you think about cranberries, you think Maine, you think maybe Massachusetts.
Oregon
State. Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So to find New York cranberries was a real task. And so it took me, a good 6 months of phone calls, research. You know, the place that grows these cranberries is the only cranberry bog in New York State, and it's almost near the St. Lawrence River, Northern Adirondacks.
Yeah,
and the guy had there's no website, there's no anything. It's just a phone number
so
to the one guy.
Drive around until you found him.
More, it's in essence, yeah. And you know, I envision it in my head, I think of a cranberry bog, and it's like this, you know, beautiful conifer background with these red berries all over the place. And so when I went up, I drove up there in a big box truck to pick up the berries to make this, you know, to make this cider. And you get up there, and it is not a beautiful bog. I mean, it looks just like an agricultural field, but they've dug out these huge pits, and they line the pits with like a plastic, and then they don't have a lot of water, so they grow the berries in these pits, and then what they do, because the cranberries float, is they just pump water from one pit to the next during the harvest, and there's only a 3-week window when they're harvesting the berries out of this bog, and they just essentially just pump water from one to the next and scoop the berries off the top and then run them through a processor and put them in the back of the truck.
The cranberry works really well. Joe, what do you think?
It's the best.
Now that's a real public relation.
Well, look, you know, all of them are great. All three of these cider varieties. But the first one I loved was cucumber lime. Cucumber lime was the best.
Cucumber lime was a great cider.
And I bought
cider.
The entire supply.
Joe loved that. A lot of people actually still love it. Yeah. It just was incredibly difficult to make, and so we kind of had to stop doing it.
Yeah. Why was it difficult to make?
The sourcing of the ingredients was basically
okay. Well, are you going to find too many New York State farm-raised limes? I don't think so.
No, right, exactly. Right.
Well, listen, let's take a quick break here in a moment, but I got to say that was really delicious, and one of the things that I love, again, is that it's got the tartness. Just a general question about your biggest selling ciders, light or otherwise. Are people trending to the sweet or the less sweet?
Both. Yeah. There's a subset of both. There's people who prefer the dry ciders. There's people who prefer something a little sweeter with, you know, more sort of fruit forward kind of flavors. Our cider always sort of hinges toward the dry end of the spectrum, and we never make anything that I would describe as sweet, you know.
Now, it's funny, you mentioned this dryness spectrum, and I was on vacation last summer, and I don't usually drink cider, and I was up and I said, you know what, I'm going to have some of this stuff. And I think it was a place out of Vermont, very, very good. I forget the name of it, but it had like a 1-7 scale or something. Is there a general scale that you guys who make cider all use for dryness?
There isn't, and actually that's something that the New York Cider Association, which is an association put together to promote New York cider, is working on, is coming up with sort of a scale that everyone can refer to so that the consumer, like yourself or anybody else, would know if they're going to purchase something and it indicates a dryness level, they can know what to expect in the drink. And right now, everyone uses different things, and it actually is we view it as a problem in that sense.
Okay. Well, let's hope you work that out. Alejandro Del Peral is here from Nine Pin Cider, Jim Eaton of Four Door Orange Brewing, and we will talk to Jim and take your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551, and we will be right back. Alejandro's here from Nine Pin Cider, Jim Eaton of Ford Orange Brewing, Joe Bonilla from Relentless, Olivia's here too, taking in the action. You having fun over there, Olivia?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Well, very good. And, you know, you're very well behaved. Actually, much better behaved than most of the guests we have on this show. So the number here is 800-348-2551. Before we start talking beer with Jim of Ford Orange, let me try one more of these light ciders. Different one.
All right.
Let's make a round for everybody. Oh, there it is.
All right, this
one's the sound of refreshment.
This one is a love hate with a lot of people, but it's also one of the most popular, and it's our lavender lemon cider.
Okay, now you know. Full disclosure: not a big lavender fan.
A lot of people.
So we'll see what happens.
A lot of people aren't, but some people are fanatics. And the only thing that I can say would sell you on this lavender. Cider is that the lavender that we use for it, like, you know, there's many different varieties of lavender, just like there are many different varieties of apples. And some lavender is used in the cosmetics industry where it's like the soaps and that kind of stuff. And a lot of people associate lavender with cleaning products and that kind of thing. But there's also a variety of lavender that's grown specifically for culinary reasons.
Yeah.
And this lavender is a culinary grade lavender, and it comes from Lavender Farms in Whitehall, New York. And they're this great lavender farm up there. The couple that runs it is just, you know, the nicest people ever. And you can go visit and pick your own and take photos with the flowers.
Well, it doesn't smell like I want to take a shower at the moment. So let's try. Here we go. Death to COVID. Mm-hmm. Cheers. Here Cheers. We go.
So,
It's not bad. No, it's really not bad. Okay.
It's got I was shocked the first time that they made me try the culinary lavender. And actually, the first time I tried it, they were making just lavender lemonade.
Yeah.
And I was like, boy, if we put this lavender into a cider and add a little lemon peel at the end, I bet you we could mimic this flavor in a nice alcoholic way. And so this is where we get it.
Gotta say, I think that the light cider is really a great idea, and it's very refreshing stuff. Good job on that.
And it's local.
Well, you always do local. I mean, wasn't that one of your things?
That is our thing, yeah.
Jim Eaton of Fort Orange Brewing, I have never had your beer. The buzz is very, very good. I can't believe that there's a brand that's been out for 4 years that I haven't tried, but that's Fort Orange. Tell us about your history.
Sure, yeah. We are three guys from Castleton, New York. We were all home brewers, and our wives are also runners, and they ran in groups in the morning. And one day we had a party over at our head brewer's house, Craig, and the three guys got together, and we saw Craig's equipment in the garage, and his entire garage was just brewing equipment, no room for a car. So John, who's my other partner, and I were looking at each other and said, wow, this guy's pretty serious about making beer.
Yeah.
So we started to, throw some recipes together, and one thing led to another, and I'll never forget, we had a pool party over at John's house, and we kind of unveiled all of our homebrews to a bunch of guests that came over that afternoon, and it was rave reviews.
Really?
And that was the moment where the light went off and said, okay, we should look into possibly doing something down the road with this brewing that we're doing. And we brought Craig out to a brewery in Massachusetts called Treehouse right at their initial inception, and he got there an hour before they were to open, and he was 150, 200 deep in line. And that's when Craig realized, okay, there's a demand for craft beer. Yeah.
And interesting that you guys started as home brewers. And by the way, the number here is 800-348-2551. Hang in there a couple of more minutes. We'll talk to Jim, and then we'll open the phones up. Very interesting that you started as home brewers. You know, wives of the homebrewers I know are long-suffering, and they roll their eyes. You go over to their house, they'll say, here, try this. And the wives would just be like, okay, just try this. But things are so much better now. I tried brewing a beer in about 1986.
Yeah,
it was the worst thing you have ever tasted. Not like your cider, but it was very cidery, and it was very, very, very awful, and we couldn't give it away. But the homebrewers today are like students, and there is so much literature out there. How did you make the jump from in the garage with the fellas to commercially doing this?
A lot of research, a lot of time, a lot of late-night brewing sessions. We went down and hung out with Nine Pin prior to opening. We went to a couple breweries, one down in Connecticut, one in southern New York, and just kind of talked to people. And you'll find in our industry, it's a very friendly, sharing, cooperative industry, and people are willing to help each other. So we also went over to Wolf Hollow and did a brewing session with them out in Glenville. And through all these experiences, it gave us what we felt enough knowledge to take that giant step forward. And, of course, we'll never be able to thank Joe enough for our grand opening reception. It was a magical night, and we're still blown away by the
And you're probably still paying the bill for bananas. Hey, I'll tell you what. You crack a couple of those bad boys, and we will take a call or two while we're doing that. We are joined today by Alejandro Del Peral of Nine Pin Cider and Jim Eaton of Fort Orange Brewing, along with the ubiquitous Joe Bonilla. 800-348-2551. Matt's in Waterford. Matt, you're up.
Hey, happy Friday, everyone. I had a quick question for you. When you develop new products, how many different iterations of experiments do you have to go through?
Stand by, Matt. Just a minute. He's got to turn his headphones up.
Okay, I'm there.
Ray, the producer, did a very poor job of telling his guests. All right, go ahead. Try it again,
Matt. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah, happy Friday. And I just had a question for you. When you develop new products, how many different iterations of experiments do you have to go through, and, you know, what size or scale do you use when you develop the new products?
So, nice, Jim.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. Happy Friday.
He's got well trained, that's why.
The having a tasting room where is a excellent place to experiment with new ciders and new products and new techniques, and that's essentially what, if you come there, what we have on tap. A lot of those are experiments, and they usually will start at, nowadays we'll start out at a 50-gallon scale. However, we still do things in at the 5-gallon carboy scale, just for, like, you know, to if we're going for something that we know is really out there. So it usually starts at 5 or 50, and then it's on, we put it on tap in the tasting room. And we, you know, you can pretty much gauge the, whether it's something that people are going to be interested in, pretty quickly, because a 50-gallon batch will either sit there for, you know, 6 months, or we'll have to pull it off and dump it, or it'll be gone in a week. And the stuff that's gone in the week, then we start thinking about, well, can we scale this up and actually wholesale it and make it for the general public.
Matt, thanks for the call. What happens after 6 months?
It usually will go down the drain, or we'll send it down to Albany Distilling. They'll make a 10th pin brandy out of it.
I mean, does it go bad?
It doesn't go bad. No, just no one. We realize that no one really wants to drink it.
Send it over here. I think the newsroom will be down with that. All right, Jim Eaton, what do we have here?
Cheers. Yeah, we're drinking our Nipper Double Dry Hopped IPA. It's one of our original Core 4, as I call it, beers, and it's brewed with Citra, Motueka, and Simcoe hops.
The Citra hops, I love the Citra hops. Here
it's
we go.
It's a big seller. Cheers.
Delicious. Oh, that's hops. Oh, oof, that's good.
That's good.
By the way, I love IPA and have for years. There was one out, I think it's a Colorado Titan, that I drank for years and loved it. I think it had a lot of Citra in it as well. Why is it now I can't go to the grocery store and find anything but IPA? I mean, there are like 80 versions of different IPAs. Is it that popular still? It's been a long craze.
It is, and it just keeps going. You know, I understand. I mean, you go to the grocery store, you see a lot more options on this, you know, in the store than you did 4 years ago when we first opened.
Yeah.
I'm glad we opened when we did, and we're not opening right now, because it's a tight market out there, for sure. It's a competitive market out there in the IPA world. But we try to also offer a variety of beers. We have 10 tap lines, and while 3 or 4 of them are generally some sort of a version of an IPA, we have others like our Raspberry Blonde. We've got Sours. Our Peanut Butter Stout is probably our most popular beer.
So interesting. Can you really get the peanut butter out of that?
Yeah. People tell us it tastes like a liquid Reese's Pieces.
Wow.
Now,
you didn't bring that, right?
The ironic thing is I don't have it because we're sold out.
Fair enough.
And I'm also allergic to peanuts, so I've actually never been able to try the beer.
Olivia, are you allergic as well?
No, I'm not.
So, all right, fair enough. Let's take a call here, and then we'll try another one from Fort Orange. Jim is in Adams. Jim, you're on.
Hey, Ray. How you doing?
Good. Nice to have you here.
You could have had me, Ray, if you invited me.
I would know. There's no room. Joe Bonilla has got like a lounge chair, and he's sitting over there. He's got a beer in his hand.
Excuses. Yeah, right. There's just more for you.
That's right, brother. Go ahead.
All right. We had a fellow in Adams that used to run a local cider mill here. He crushed people's apples for them and make cider for them, and he also made his own cider and sold it local stores. And I heard from one of the members of, he started a kind of an offshoot of the local volunteer fire department company in town. He started the forest wardens thing, and my former brother-in-law was a member of that for a while, and he told me how when they would let hard cider ferment in barrels and kegs at his Mr. Anthony's cider mill, he's a descendant of Susan B. Anthony, they would freeze some of them. Or let them freeze in the wintertime, maybe, or whatever. And then they would tap into the center where it was not frozen, and they would draw that out, and they called it Applejack. It was a very high alcohol content, naturally, because the other portion that froze was a higher water content. Have you ever heard of such a beverage? It was fairly high in alcohol content.
That is the old-school traditional way to make Applejack. It's through a process called freeze distillation.
Yeah.
It's not done that way on a commercial level, and it's predominantly because in addition to carrying over the ethanol in that situation, you're also carrying over the methanol.
Ah, and, not a good thing.
Which methanol is what can make you go blind.
Sure, drinking, you exactly.
Know, so.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So, but you know, that being said, I don't know. You know, I would drink it. You know what I mean? I don't. I ain't scared.
You know. You know, too much of it to get an effect. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Really high in alcohol content.
Right. Don't try that at home.
How do they do it modern days now? They add sugar to the blend?
So modern day Applejack is essentially made like brandy. They run it just through a still. They heat it up. The alcohol boils off at a different temperature than everything else. And modern day distillers, they know how to make their, they call it making their cuts, but they cut the methanol boiling temp off, and then they keep, it's called the heads, the hearts, and the tails. And the heads, I believe, is the methanol, and the hearts are what you drink. That's the pure Applejack. And then the tails are discarded or redistilled.
Huh.
So you ferment, you do the same process. You ferment it, but then you distill it, and you only keep the hearts, and that's your Applejack. You age it in a barrel, and it's delicious, yeah.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday with Jim Eaton of Fort Orange Brewing and Alejandro Del Peral of Nine Pin Cider. This email came in from Tig, who says, I've noticed that the balance of acid versus sweet, more important to my taste, the dry versus sweet. How are dryness and acidity balanced versus sweetness? How are they related to alcohol content? And that is in cider.
Well, that's a complicated question, but a great one. I mean, the way acidity and sugar, like the three major components of a cider's flavor profile, it's acid, it's sugar, and it's tannins. Tannin is sort of the bitter, mouth drying sensation you get when you drink like a thick red wine, or it's in coffee, it's in oak, and your perception of sweetness is highly dependent on the amount of acid, but also very important on the amount of tannin that's in the cider. Now, there are very few apple varieties which provide a lot of tannin into cider, so it's mostly you're dealing with the balance of sweet and sour with a little teeny bit of bitter in there. And you can have cider that's incredibly acidic and also incredibly high in sugar, and it will be perceived as being very dry, whereas you could have a cider that's low in acid but also have way less sugar than that one, and it'll be perceived as being more sweet.
Hey, man, how did you learn all this stuff?
8 years of getting drunk, basically.
Ah, well said, and sorry to Olivia. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's cider and beer today on Food Friday. All right, Jim Eaton, let's try one more. You know, and while you're tapping that, and go right ahead.
Yep. Got to get the sound effect, right?
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, you know that Albany has a tremendous and long history of brewing, right? You know all about that. I mean, that's maybe why you got the name.
We're named Fort Orange Brewing. We took a 125-year hiatus and came back 4 years ago.
Oh, that I had not realized.
Yeah. Back in the 1880s, we were a brewery.
So back when you were—
I wasn't here.
But you were probably, I don't even know if you were born back in the day, but and every brewer who I've had on is so sick of me talking about Bill Newman.
Hmm.
But he was the godfather of all the microbrews in this area and probably— you know, one of the earliest in the country. I mean, we're talking about the mid-80s here.
Yeah, Bill's been in our place plenty of times. I know Bill.
Yeah, well, he made you guys are way too young, but he made some killer beer. I mean, the winter ale, I can remember it to this day. What do we got here?
Yeah, cheers. We have our raspberry blonde ale, which is a nice kind of seasonal summer light-bodied ale. It's got a nice little red color to it. Cheers, guys.
Here we go. Now, these are very small, thimble-sized cups, if you're listening at home and wondering how we'll get home. Wow. Okay, that's probably a very popular one, right?
That is, especially this time of the year. We have a blonde ale series, and we always kind of do a fruited flavor with it, and we change it up throughout the year depending on what season it is. And this one is doing very well for us.
What's your most popular, you think?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, because some people come into our tap room and say, I hate IPAs. They'll try the nipper, and they'll leave with a four-pack of nipper in their hand.
Yeah.
You know? I would say the one beer that probably people associate with us the most, in all honesty, is the peanut butter stout.
Really?
Yep.
Now, do you do anything of a more, you know, like a Dutch or German style of less hops, more malt?
Absolutely. We actually just brewed last night. Our head brewer, Craig, just made our Oktoberfest first batch.
Oh, really?
Yep. And that does very well for us in the fall as well. And we're excited. That's one of my favorites, too.
Okay, put me down for some of that. Now, do you do a Maibock, you know, February, March, or anything like that?
We haven't done anything like that.
Oh, boy.
But we're always looking at, you know, we do barrel-aged beers. We actually are going to put some of this peanut butter stout in a bourbon barrel from Yankee Distilling up in Clifton Park. And we'll be tapping that probably sometime in early September.
Now, I've had some of these barrel-aged beers, and they're very good. But, I mean, what is specifically the length of time you would have to leave it in a beer in a barrel?
So what we do, and Craig, our head brewer, typically does this, is he'll take little samples and as we go through the process, and when it's ready, he knows when it's ready, and that's when we'll keg it. So
now, who does this?
Craig, who's our head brewer.
Now, if Craig has to keep sampling it, there'll be nothing left. I mean, does he have a general idea of how long it takes?
Yeah, on average, I would say anywhere from 2 to 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, let's take a quick break here. Jim Eaton is here from Fort Orange Brewing. Alejandro Del Peral of Nine Pin Cider. More of your calls, more of your emails. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday and Beer at Wine today. The beer being handled by Jim Eaton of Fort Orange Brewing. Alejandro Del Peral of Nine Pin Cider handles your cider questions. The number is 800-348-2551. We go to Don in New Baltimore. Hiya, Don. You're on.
Hi. How are you today? Thanks for the call. Taking the call.
Sure.
Hey, you were asking earlier about sourcing of limes in New York State.
Yes.
And this was about 20 years ago. But out in western New York, in conjunction with oil and gas drilling and activity, there were people that had cogens out in western New York in the old oil fields, and they had greenhouses where they were making limes. And I don't know if they're still out there, but I was working out in that area, and the limes were about the size of softballs.
Wow.
Wow.
That's the first time I've ever heard that.
Softball-sized limes. Yeah. Where were these?
It was out in western New York, down around the Southern Tier.
In the Southern Tier.
Wow.
You know, I have never even tried to source citrus fruit in New York State, except that my wife, Sasha, just when we moved into our house 3 years ago, planted a lime tree.
And how'd that work out?
We got one lime.
Oh, nice.
We did. It was amazing. And then a bird came and ate it. But
These are all hothouse limes,
right?
But they are from New York. And the other thing you were talking about, cranberries.
Yes,
there actually are some cranberry patches up in the Adirondacks in Lake Pleasant.
In Lake Pleasant, huh? They're in there are bogs in the lake. Is that near Brasher Falls or no?
This is down by it's above Little So- you know, about Big Sacandaga by Little Sacandaga.
Oh, okay.
I forget the name of the river, but there's the Country Muck.
You know, Don,
the Country Muck actually has some.
I mean, the real thing that what Alejandro really wants to do is just drive around the state until he finds one.
I'm going to check this out. Lake Pleasant, yeah, especially the limes.
That's cool. That's really good. And so we're going to look into this Western New York softball-sized limes, which frankly sounds like the premise to some sort of a sci-fi movie. They're just huge. Did you try one, Don?
Well, I've actually seen them. I did not try one. And if you look up NYIOGA, New York Independent Oil and Gas Association, and reach out to them. I'm sure they'll know about it.
Okay.
An unusual source. Yeah.
Simple plug right there. Let's see if the public relations guy can spin that one up. Hey, Don, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Carrie writes in, how is peanut butter stout beer made?
Well, it's a great question. So we have a stout base, basically, that we were making for quite some time. And after a while, you know, we always try to think, okay, what else can we do to this base to make it exciting? And we actually purchased from Sam's Club about a case and a half of peanut butter, Jiffy peanut butter. And poor Craig is taking that peanut butter and throwing it into a fermentation vessel. And it sits back there for another week or so after it's basically the beer making process is complete. It's a real pain to clean out, by the way.
Yeah. Do you make Craig do that as well?
Craig, John, and I, we help him out. He doesn't do all the cleaning back there. So basically, the peanut butter is a late addition after the beer's making process has been complete.
Yeah.
And then we let it sit back there and kind of blend together, and then we keg it or can it, and off it goes.
That's really interesting. So could you use chunky peanut butter?
We could. I guess we could. I know he prefers the Jiffy easy spread.
Jiff. Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. How about some fluff in there, too? You know?
You know, there are places that do that.
Really?
Yep.
It's a strange – and I bet you it's the same place you can get the softball-sized limes, right? 800-348-2551. Food Friday today, wine and – not wine. Cider and beer, and Jess is in Brunswick. Jess, you're on.
Hi. My first question is for Alejandro regarding the cider at Nine Pin. I was just wondering, I frequent there often, but wondering what goes into your decision-making and why you add sugar to some of your ciders. And then my second question is, I would love to be a cider maker one day. Mm. So kind of just like ways to get into the industry or any resources that you might have.
So you know, sugar is an interesting thing. It's sort of like, you know, it's kind of like a you know, people think of it as a bad word, but the balance of flavor in ciders, like we were describing earlier, is really based off of two things, or the three things: sugar, acid, and tannin. So there are certain ciders that naturally, once done fermenting, have a residual amount of sugar. But if you're gonna, that is variable from fermentation to fermentation. So if you're gonna end up with a consistent sweet sour balance, sometimes you have to supplement by adding sugar. And, you know, in a commercial sort of process like ours, that's the one way we gain any level of consistency.
Hmm.
And I sort of like liken adding sugars to ciders as being like adding salt to food. You know, you can oversalt food and it just tastes like salt and it's gross, but salt is a way to make enhanced flavors in food and brings out flavors in food, and sugar does the same thing in ciders. It can be a way to first of all, balance the acids, but also enhance some of the fruitier flavors that are otherwise lost in something that's purely dry. And that's sort of, what was the other question? I forgot the other question.
Hi, Jess, are you still there?
Oh, yes, I'm still here. I'm currently a physical therapist, but one of my dreams one day is to become a cider maker. I previously worked in the wine industry, so just kind of wondering, you know, if there's like apprenticeship programs out there or any other like resources that you know of how to learn to make cider.
You know, one great place would be to reach out to the New York Cider Association, and you could send an email. The executive director's name is Scott Ramsey, and send an email and just say, hey, I'm looking for some sort of way to apprentice, or there are even jobs available, you know, and that is by far the best way to get involved and get experiences to sort of get, you know, start working with an actual manufacturer, or actual company. And I would totally recommend doing that if you're interested at all. And it's the New York Cider Association.
I mean, she'll make more money as a physical therapist, right?
100%. Yeah.
Okay, so remember that, Jess.
But you'll have
probably not. Probably not.
Well, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. You know, I was talking to Jim Eaton about the proliferation of craft brewers. I mean, 20 years ago, there were a handful. Now, have we done a count?
There's a lot. I know in New York State alone, I believe there's over 300 breweries.
Wow.
Active, yeah.
That's incredible. How about the cider world?
New York is number one in the nation for craft cideries.
I mean, how many?
I think we're 80, maybe 84, 80 to 90. That's another great question for the New York Cider Association.
maybe we'll have them on as well. Alejandro, how many in the country? Do we have any idea how? I mean, this is another thing that has been on the up and up. Craft beer has been, if you look at the arrow, keeps going up and up and up and up. Cider has been, I think, doing the same thing, but it's sort of under the radar.
Yeah, cider, I mean, we are such a small piece of the beverage industry. I mean, there's a statistic out there that more beer is consumed during the Super Bowl than cider is consumed year round. So just to give you an idea of where we stand amongst these guys, you know. But believe it or not, the capital region, in particular, because of, you know, people love drinking nine pin cider for some reason.
Well, that's okay. Yeah,
right, exactly. We are we stand out on national. If you look at like, you know, the national trends, the cider consumption rate in this capital region is actually stands out as one of the highest in the country, which is pretty cool.
You know, New York, obviously, a great variety of apples all across the state and really all across this whole region.
Yeah,
there are tremendous apples of endless varieties. How do you go about picking your apples? I mean, not picking. I know how you do that.
Okay.
Choosing.
So we work with we have one made our primary orchard partner is Samascot Orchards, and we actually work with them in terms of working with the fruit that they're harvesting at the moment, that they have excess of, that they need to convert into juice. So we work with what's available and then create blends based off of that. You know, we're not the cider producers who are saying we need you to grow these because, you know, that's what we want. We say, okay, we're here to sort of take your what you have as extra or waste and turn that into this sort of this valuable, delicious, you know, product.
You know, Jim, it may be tougher to find hops that are local, although
actually not really.
It's so funny. I believe, and of course, my memory, as I've said many times, is a little sketchy. But I thought there was a spot in downtown Albany where there were actually some hops growing that went way back. I mean, a long time.
Yeah.
But hops. Traditionally, you outsource your hops a lot, right?
Majority of them are, yeah. Majority of our hops are not from New York State, but we do have some beers that do contain all New York State ingredients, and on occasion you'll see them on tap at Nine Pin or Albany Distilling or any of the other places like that.
I mean, is there a character? Like, we talked about the Citra hops, and they have they're very citrusy, both in nose and in taste. Are there characteristics of the local terroir, as they say?
So the sexy hops are the ones that are not from this area, the Citra, the Mosaic, the very, you know, grapefruit flavors or citrusy type flavors. Most of the ones that are from the Capital Region area we find are kind of, no offense to them, they're more bland. They don't have that punch. They don't have that IPA punch to it that the other hops do.
Well, I mean, there's more to life than just IPA.
Yes, yes.
And what did you brew with just regional hops?
So we've done a New York State IPA. We've done a New York State Blonde Ale. And I believe we also did a New York State Stout. We haven't done a lot of local brews. Most of them are what's moving in our marketplace more. But we have done a few, yeah.
What makes a New England IPA? I see this Electric Trail. Yep. I don't know if did we try that?
We did not try that.
On the side, it says it's named after a 36-mile recently completed trail, which is kind of cool.
Yep.
But what makes a New England IPA?
So typically, a New England IPA has the color. The color, it has that hazy look to it. They're generally a soft mouthfeel. It generally has a citrusy type characteristic to it as well. But when we pour a New England IPA in our tap room, right now we have our Galactic Explosion, which is a 100% Galaxy hopped IPA. As soon as it comes out of the tap panels, you can tell that that's a New England IPA based on the color and the density of the beer.
Yeah.
Whereas a lighter ale will be something that you might be able to see through. It's opaque, but I mean, if we crack this Electric Trail, you'll see the hazy quality of a New England IPA.
We are talking to Jim Eaton of Fort Orange Brewing and Alejandro Del Peral of Nine Pin Cider. I look forward to the Oktoberfest for sure, so that'll be an exciting one. Let's go to Jack. Oh, that's a lot of noise, Jack. Hello, you're on. Why?
Pardon me. I am calling you from the road. That's what that was. So I just wanted to say that I'm driving along and I'm excited about this conversation. I'm a home cider maker.
Yeah.
I've made at most 80 gallons in a year, which is a lot for one person.
To drink.
and I'm an arborist, so I have a supply of, you know, an easy supply of apples in a way. And I've made cider with uncultivated apples for the most part, so apples that are from trees that have been let go over the years. And I went to an event, which I also wanted to mention. The main reason for my call is to mention an event in the Berkshires called Cider Days, which I hope is still happening, because it's an amazing event.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I picked up there is that wild apples that are not cultivated are also not fertilized. And there is some of the off flavors apparently are associated with higher nitrogen content of the apples. And so having apples that are found out of cultivation maybe make a better cider or a less troublesome cider. So it's just an observation that I've had that seems to have rung true for me because I've had, you know, kind of uninterrupted successes in terms of making home cider with pretty strong yeasts like champagne yeasts. But anyway, so those are kind of a random assortment of observations, but I especially wanted to plug Cider Days if it's still happening, because the one thing that I had there was a table covered with at least 200 varieties of cider apples, and they were offering them to try, so you could just go from apple to apple and try all these crazy tastes and think about it. And it was so fun.
They've actually it's been a couple of years, but those folks were on this show. And it was really cool.
It's a great event.
So what do you make about his comments about the apples and the nitrogen content?
He's totally right. I mean, that we see it, when we were, orchard to orchard, depending on how they grow the fruit, depending on how much, how much fertilizers they're using, the pace of fermentation is incredibly variable. And we can actually measure the total nitrogen content before the fermentation starts. You do a formal titration. It's called a yeast assimilable nitrogen. And it totally changes the pace of fermentation. Now, over time, we've learned that you can compensate for that by basically cooling things down. You use different yeast strains. You do a different pitch rate. You use less yeast when you start. But when he refers to these uncultivated apples or wild apples, you totally see those the fermentations that go with. We do those as well, and they're on tap in the tasting room. I've been up in the trees shaking them onto the ground of the tarp just like everybody else, those fermentations tend to run very slow. And when you get a really long, slow fermentation like that, it tends, in our experience, tends to produce these, it conserves all the aromas and all that stuff doesn't get blasted off, with a really, aggressive, fast, high nitrogen content fermentation.
All right. We only have about a minute left. In fact, exactly a minute left here. Alejandro Del Peral, what's on the docket for the future at Nine Pin? Anything coming?
We have, I'm not sure how many Nine Pin 26ers are listening, but we do this... we've done this thing for the last 6 years, the 9-Pin 26er program. We release 26 ciders over the course of the year. It's a challenge. And when you become a 9-Pin 26er, we have people who are going to be doing it for the third time.
Right.
You get to be part of you get all these benefits, including being part of sort of our experimental process, which is really awesome.
And so you get to be a guinea pig.
You're a guinea pig. We'll invite you in for free tastings and give us feedback on certain ciders and that kind of stuff.
Cool. So, and is there a secret handshake?
There's a card. There's a secret card, a membership card.
Very
exactly.
Jim Eaton, What's ahead at Fort Orange?
Yeah, we're excited. We're at a point where we're starting to grow again. We got past this pandemic. We've got another tank on the way, another 15-barrel fermenter, and we're starting to get some more help within the tap room and in our production facility too. And so our biggest thing is we're just trying to keep our tap lines filled and more product getting out there.
Well, great having you both here. It feels like the life is coming back, and it's a great thing. Joe Bonilla, very quickly, what's happening with you, man?
Everything. I mean, we have this new coffee brand we're working on right now. I've been traveling again, but it's been great.
Motor Oil Coffee.
Yeah, there we go. Which Alejandro thought it was fake for a while, but it's real.
He's always working again.
I thought it was an April Fool's joke.
It was on April 1st, yeah.
Hey, guys, thanks a lot for being here. Support comes from Pekarsky, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. Family owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst on smoked meats. Home of New England farm-made sausage. Open 7 days. Pekarsky's.com. Olivia's Organics, offering natural organic juices in 5 blends, cold-crafted in New England and available at Hannaford Supermarkets and Delmar Farmers Market, featuring local and organic farm products, baked goods, and fair trade crafts every Saturday 9 to 1 at 332 Kenwood Avenue, Delmar. I've tried again. Semi-professional broadcaster. DelmarMarket.org. All right, that's it. It's been a long week. I have personally had enough. I hope you have had enough, too, but not enough to turn the radio off because there are other things ahead that are equally, well, they're a damn bit more professional, actually. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Thanks to Barb King. Thank you, and we'll see you on Monday.